Well, joining me now in the studio from the United States Ski and Snowboard Association, Tom Kelly. Hi, Tom.
Morning, Leslie. There's still a little snow out there.
Yeah, there is, and it's going to at least stay hard for a couple more days.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
So you've been in Maine?
No, I've actually been in Moab. So.
Okay.
Where it was mid-80s down there, but we did have a lot of action in Maine and Steamboat over the last weekend.
Okay, well, let's hear about the Alpine National U.S. National Championships. Some young folks there.
That was really great championships. Every time we go back to the East, particularly Sugarloaf, it's just such a boost for the sport. It's certainly the most densely populated area we have in USSA Alpine, and Sugarloaf just tends to attract a wide range of news media, so we had great coverage for the sport up there and some great results at the Nature Valley U.S. Alpine Championships. It kicked off on last Wednesday with the Super G event. Alice McKennis, a veteran World Cup racer in a comeback year, picking up what was her first ever U.S. title. A little bit of a surprise, but great way to cap a comeback season for her. And then on the men's side, it was Drew Duffy picking up his first win, a skier who's never even been in a World Cup before. And great to see a young athlete like that pick up a victory right out of the chute. And that kind of set the tone for the championships with a nice blend of veterans and newcomers. That continued the next day in the women's giant slalom when Nina O'Brien picked up her first U.S. championship podium with a gold medal. And then the next day in the men's giant slalom, it was Tim Jitloff, veteran, picking up his third straight. And then wrapping it up with the slaloms over the weekend, David Chinansky picking up the win for the men, veteran of the World Cup. And then on the women's side, it was Michaela Schifrin, get this, winning by 4.31 seconds over junior world championship Paula Molson. So a great time out there. Lindsey Vonn, who was here in Park City yesterday, also was out there. She foreran the giant slalom, and great to have Michaela in the action picking up the slalom gold. So all in all, a great championships out at Sugarloaf.
Yeah, so do some of the top stars then just kind of back off to give the younger folks an opportunity here?
It's a little bit of a mix. It depends on the various situations. Ted actually needed to get back to have some follow-up surgery on the hand that he broke earlier this season, actually. But I think for a lot, and Julie Mancuso just taking a little bit of time off, not a great season for her, and just taking a little break. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag. The World Cup season is like 6 months long, so it's a little bit arduous, but it was great to have Lindsay out there. She was a huge, huge hit and made a great impact on all of the young racers we had out there. And of course, Michaela Schifrin in the slalom just drew an amazing crowd for her race day on Saturday.
All right. And I think Megan McJames from Park City took third in that race, huh?
Yeah, she was third. And she had some good races. But, in the GS, Nina O'Brien just really stepping it up to take the win. And then Megan picking up that podium in the slalom.
Okay. So how's Ted's hand doing?
Haven't gotten a report, but I'm sure it's going to be fine. Obviously, he did pretty well during the season with it. Not as great a season as he would have liked. Did not win the World Cup title this year, but certainly the World Championship gold, his third straight, was a really important step for him.
Okay. You also had the U.S. Freestyle Championships taking place in Steamboat.
Yeah, at the same time, under sunny skies over in Steamboat, a great championship event there. Last event for Hannah Carney, and she picked up a win in the Moguls on Friday. Great victory for her. Troy Murphy picking up the win on the men's side, and then in aerials on Saturday. Pretty tough soft conditions, which impacted the women a little bit more than the men. Ashley Caldwell eventually taking the win over Kylie McKinnon on the women's side, but really, not a lot of great jumps by the girls, just really due to the conditions there. But on the men's side, Mac Mohana just launching a really, really big jump to take the victory over Harrison Smith, who won the junior world title last week in aerials as well over in Italy. And then wrapping it up on Sunday, on the men's side, it was Thomas Rowley picking up the win. And then on the women's side, Nessa Dzemian picking up the victory there. So that season is in the books. And the folks who were out at Deer Valley yesterday might have seen Hannah Carney skiing around, enjoying retirement by skiing the bumps on Champion. She's going to be going to school at Westminster College. So let's all join and welcome her to our community where she's going to be living and hopefully skiing a little bit for fun over the next few years.
Okay. And we also have the national championships for cross country. It seems to me I thought we had those earlier.
Well, this was the long distance portion, which we always tend to separate and put at the end of the season, part of the Super Tour up there. And Sun Valley Snow, a little bit of an issue there. The race has moved up to Galena Lodge. For folks who know the Sun Valley area, that's a little bit north, much higher in elevation. Great racing over there, actually, throughout the Super Tour finals last week, culminating on Thursday with the U.S. Championship in the men's 50K. Was Noah Hoffman, no big surprise, picking up the gold medal for the top U.S. skier. And then on the women's side, Caitlin Gregg coming off her bronze medal at World Championship in the 10K, and also strong finishes for her in the Engadin Ski Marathon. So right now, you know, one of the top distance skiers in America, she picked up the gold medal on the women's side. We also, over the weekend up there, announced a new uniform sponsor for the U.S. Cross Country Ski Team and U.S. Nordic Combined Ski Team, partnering up with well-known American retailer L.L. Bean to provide us with our uniforms, and that's a partnership that they'll share with Kraft Sportswear, a Swedish company, and really excited to have that iconic brand involved with that team. Athletes up there trying on the new uniforms this weekend, and very proud to have L.L. Bean and Kraft involved with our program.
Okay. And with Vail Resorts picking up Perisher Resort in Australia, any chance that we'd see a World Cup down under in June or something?
Well, that was kind of an interesting one this weekend, that Vail Resorts now has gone down under in acquiring Perisher. There have been World Cups down in Australia before. It's been quite a while since we've been down there, and I don't recall if we've actually been at Perisher before. Most of our training has been over in New Zealand in recent years, so we actually are developing some really strong partnerships over there. So I don't know if this acquisition by Vail will mean too much for our teams. We're actually kind of on that note putting in a pretty good investment with a New Zealand area called Ohau, where we're assisting them in development of infrastructure like snowmaking in order to provide us with better training conditions in the summertime. And those types of relationships and partnerships in New Zealand have been really fruitful for us. So, but it was interesting to see that Vail has expanded its reach again one more time. I don't know. I imagine the Epic Pass will be good down there. So if folks want to head down there this summer, you'll probably get some good skiing down at Perisher.
Okay. And you'll be back, what, in a week or two?
We'll come back and give you a wrap-up next week. And just a couple other things to add. It was good to see Lindsey Vonn in town yesterday, skiing over at Park City Mountain Resort and checking out the new connection link with Canyons. And also just a shout out to Bill Johnson, whose 55th birthday was this past Monday. Bill, for those who follow the 1984 Olympic champion in downhill, he's had a really rough go after his crash leading into the Salt Lake Games. He's now in a nursing home up in Portland, really not able to speak too well. I did talk to him on Monday, and he's very cognizant of what's going on, but health is deteriorating quite a bit. He was a great champion and really ushered in the modern era of downhill racing here in America.
Okay. Hey, Tom, thanks for coming in.
Good. Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:24 now. Good morning. Well, crews continue to finish up the remodel and expansion of the Park City Library. In the studio with an update, I have Library Director Adrian Juarez. Good morning.
Good morning.
So given the agreement what the City Council signed with the Egyptian Theater's Youth Theater Program, you need to be moved out by the Miners Hospital as of June 8th. That's when they're moving in. You're optimistic that's going to happen?
Yes, we're on track with a June opening, so we should be moving. We're working with the movers, and we will be done.
Okay. Well, we took a tour yesterday, and still look like quite a bit of work that needs to be done. A staircase needs to be put in. You need still all of the furnishings and things like that. I mean, what's on the list of things that have to be done still?
Well, it's been amazing working with Oakland Construction. They are moving right along. They have crews preparing, and they are keeping to a very strict timeline. So I feel comfortable that they are going to get everything done in time. We have our shelving on order for all of the bookcases, so those are coming, and those have an install date. We have our furniture on order, so it's moving right along, and they're getting to the stage of just getting the finishes done. So the staircase is about to be done, and they're doing a lot of the cleanup work and a lot of the things that they're going to have to finish up to get the building released.
Yeah, so supposedly you're starting with the punch list with the contractor then as soon as this month?
Yes, punch list is moving. So, I mean, that means we're getting right down to it.
Mm-hmm. And then once crews are out of there, I mean, how long is it going to take for you to move in the furnishings and the books and things like that?
Well, we have books in a number of places now. We have books at City Hall. We have books at the old fire station on Park Avenue. We have books in Miners Hospital. So it's going to take a lot of choreography. And we are prepared. The crew's ready. We will need to stage it so that books get moved, hopefully from City Hall first and from the old fire station, and then we will be able to keep our doors open as long as possible in Miners Hospital before those pieces come in. So I think it's going to go just fine. We have spreadsheets that tell us what shelves everything goes on, and we're getting all of that quickly put into place.
Okay. I mean, we had talked about doing a book brigade to move the book to mm-hmm. Miners out of the library, but due to timing, we ended up having to do it, you know, yourselves. So mm-hmm. any chance of doing the brigade this way back then? Or
we would very much like to do the book brigade. We're planning a grand opening now. The book brigade, there's just way too much in that library for it to be the official way that we move everything into the new library. So the movers will help us take care of that, and we've got a lot of interfiling we need to do with all of those collections. But we want to do something that people can come out, have a good time, pass some books. So we're getting the details put together, but something that will be a book brigade.
All right. So you expect the grand opening when?
We're hoping for mid-June. You know, with construction, knock on wood, there are, you know, always a few bits and pieces that have to be put into place. But we're hoping for a Saturday so that most people possible can be involved.
All right. So what do we have to look forward to in the new space besides more space?
Oh my goodness, the space is beautiful. You got to come through yesterday, and I hope you enjoyed it. The grand entry that we now have will have a coffee shop cafe, and it has beautiful glass doors that open out onto a patio overlooking the green space to the north of the library. When you come in, there's a nice library entry where there will be browsable space, kind of a browsing library that looks like a bookstore, so you can go in there and you can select materials. We have an expanded children's program on the first floor that includes new age levels that we have broken out to really serve our young people in Park City, from the earliest to the teens, and we're excited about that. On the second floor, we have a beautiful reading room with a small patio terrace that people can go outdoors and read on, and a new digital media lab, which is going to allow things like sound recording and green screen creation of film and 3D printing and hands-on projects. So it's going to be amazing. Lots of community rooms, community spaces. It's really a building that the public can own and get into and make their own.
Mm-hmm. So this digital media lab, is that going to be done on like on a rentable place? I mean, you have to like sign up for space?
It's actually a public space. So mm-hmm. it's like coming to the library and using a computer. These are just very high-tech resources. And there will also be classes and programs to help people get involved with that area.
Yeah, but I'm just guessing it could be pretty popular. So mm-hmm. would you need to sign up in advance to use the space?
Or? Well, we're still working on policy for how that's going to work, but we will make it equitable so people can get in there as needed.
All right. And so you're kind of thinking in that the ground floor is going to be a little bit noisier than maybe the quiet floor up above, huh?
Yeah. This is a kind of a choose-your-own-experience library, so there will be a lot of activity on that main floor with the younger populations and collections, and also movies and music. The second floor, we have study rooms that are nice and quiet. People can go in there and study or have small group conversations. And then we have this beautiful reading room that has glass doors, so people can go in there. There will be magazines, and there will be newspapers in there. They can quietly read and get away from the hubbub if you want. So libraries are multi-use and many people having different needs, so we're trying to accommodate.
Yeah, and I mean, take a look at how libraries have changed. I mean, mm-hmm. it's still all about the books, but so much more now, huh? I mean, because there was some talk, you know, that it's like, oh, well, libraries are the thing of the past with digital books, but maybe we need them even more now, huh?
Oh, even more. There's never a better time to be in libraries. We have a little bit of everything. And we want it to be something from birth to, you know, right up past retirement that people can enjoy. So I don't see print going away. People love the print experience, but now it's so much more enhanced with all the digital options. So we're giving it all, you know, the world, downloadables, and super exciting.
Yeah, you do use those downloadables, and it's mm-hmm. It's just like a book.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to buy one digital copy, right?
Yeah, we do.
And then that gets rented out, and it can't be...
Right, it's like a book. Mm-hmm. It goes right onto your device, and then 3 weeks when it's due, it just disappears off of there, and another person can take it out. So it works quite like a book.
All right. Now, the coffee shop the mm-hmm. and cafe, they're open when the library's open, or will they be open early before the library's open?
Well, right now we've talked to them about perhaps having some hours before we open. So the library doesn't open till 10, and obviously with coffee, people are going to want to get it early in the morning. So we've made that an option for the coffee shop, so people can come and have a nice cup of coffee before the library opens and have a place to sit looking over the patio on the north.
Yeah, and is the plan for them to stay open as long as the library is?
Yeah, if that's feasible, we would very much like that. We're still working on hours, and we want it to be something that the coffee shop can benefit, you know, when they have the most customers. We want to make it so they can succeed there. So we'll be talking about that with them as we go along.
All right. And then in the second floor on those community rooms, you tell us a little bit about some of the things you've done there, because you're using some flexible furnishings. You're going to have some smart TVs that people can come in and rent that out?
Yeah, they absolutely can. And that is space that is flexible. So we'll have tables and chairs that actually fold up and can push against the wall. That can be configured in any way that meets a person's meeting needs or gathering needs. And we'll have smart TVs in there. So for presentations, people can plug in their computers. Those will all have Skype capability. So if you want to have international conferences or anything on those screens, you can do that. We've tried to make it so that they are something that everyone can use, even visitors. You know, maybe you're flying in from Hong Kong, you need to have a meeting on Skype or something. You could actually reserve that room and make that happen.
Yeah. So is that a paid reservation, or you can...
Well, library spaces are free for public use. However, if it's a for-profit event or something like that, there would be some fees related to that. The library board will be looking at room policies coming up, so that will be established.
Okay. And then, what about the wireless network? Is that available to the public? Or?
Yeah, still available everywhere throughout the building, and we'll have a lot of comfortable places where people can tuck in with their laptops and get a lot of work done. So we've made the spaces very flexible, and people will be able to do that everywhere they go in the building.
All right. Now, on the third floor, that's not the library, but there's also some renovations going on. I mean, there was another rentable space up there.
Yeah, it's part of the library. There's a big community room up there. It's the room across from the Santee Auditorium, which had walls in front of it previously for classrooms. Those walls have been brought down. They're beautiful glass doors there, and so they can be used for larger meetings and larger events.
So that's considered library space there?
Well, the whole building's the library, and we'll oversee the room bookings. We're working to get someone into the library who knows how to deal with bookings and spaces and rentals. So, it's all one big building.
All right. Well, it looks a lot bigger than it ever has, but I think, and that's mostly just by taking walls down or putting the glass doors in and opening up the lighting in there. How much of an addition did you actually add?
I think it was about 20,000. We need to ask Matt Twombly, because that space, I think about a third of that space opened up with that, the classroom walls coming down so that the whole library could open up.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else that you wanted to tell us about it?
Just that we're excited to throw open the doors. We're planning a grand opening when we do open, and we hope the community will come out and have a first look and enjoy that space and make it theirs.
Great. Adrian, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Adrian Juarez is the director of the Park City Library. It's 8:35 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio with me now, I have Park City Manager Diane Foster, along with Economic Development Director Jonathan Weidenhammer. Good morning.
Good morning.
See, the Park City Council is meeting tomorrow in work session starting at 4 o'clock. Let's quickly, Diane, talk about the proposed site visit to Whistler. Councilmember Andy Bierman had expressed interest in visiting that place after finding out about it, kind of a unique and innovative transportation solution in their workforce housing. You're scheduled to talk about that and even vote, I think, about going in June or July. Proposed cost, $2,500 a person. So are we talking about sending the entire council?
That's a question for the council. As you know, with City Tour, the city has a long history over 30 years, I believe, history of going and grabbing great ideas from other communities. And so Councilmember Bierman had asked specifically about Whistler because of their, as you mentioned, innovative transportation and the fact that they're committed to housing it's around 70% of their workforce within the community. That's a stunning number. And given that our city council has, they've taken their 13 priorities down to two critical priorities, and those are housing and transportation. So given that, it seems like the perfect community to visit. So Kristen Parker has put together a staff report that looks at what would it cost, what's her proposed agenda. Like City Tour, it would be one of those packed agendas that you're exhausted by the end of it because you've met so many local officials, economic development officials, housing people, transportation people. And so it's a question whether they want to go now, whether they'd want to go in the future.
Yeah. So staff members would come along as well?
We typically send along a couple staff members to, you know, support council, as well as specifically we'd probably look at sending someone from transportation and someone from housing.
Mm-hmm. So they have like 1,900 units, as I was reading in the packet, what it calls residential restricted units. Any idea who built them?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. And obviously Canadian law could be a little bit different. But I think anytime you go and see things that are not, that are different from your own experience, you have learning.
Yeah. And I notice also on the proposed itinerary that you would be taking private transportation from the airport to your hotel and then from the hotel to your meeting. So if you're going there to learn about innovative transportation, don't you think you should be like taking the innovative transportation?
I believe on the draft itinerary, the specific transportation from the airport to Whistler is actually a train. And so and in the packet itself, Kristen has put in a number of items of different forms of transportation. So they have an incredible number of different methods that people can travel to and from the resort. And the idea would be that we would give council the opportunity to take a lot of those different forms of transportation and have that experience.
Okay, yeah, you could even take a helicopter, it sounds like.
You could take a helicopter. That probably won't be on the agenda.
Yeah, and I guess it seems like 6 days, it's something that couldn't be accomplished in half that time?
Well, this is a proposed itinerary, so this is one that council asked staff to look into it. Staff went ahead and did research on what are all the things that could happen, what are all the things you'd want to look at, and put together a draft itinerary. We'd likely end up with something a little bit less than 6 days, but I think if you're going to take that kind of trip, you should at least do 3 or 4 days so that you're really getting the opportunity to meet with local officials and understand how they finance things, how they've funded it, how has it been received, what are the things that they've seen that have been most successful, and also what have been some of their failures.
All right. So the things like the ATV tour and the bear tour are kind of the junket-sounding things. They're just possibilities.
They're options for council. One of the things I thought that was very interesting that that Kristen included in the appendix in the packet was a number of the sheer number of activities that are available to visitors and how they're presented in a very comprehensive manner. And so I think that was just a good, for me, when I read it, what it said was, wow, are we taking all the things, you know, we have so many different companies that offer anything from you can go take a yoga class on a paddleboard in the crater over in Midway to going out on snowmobile rides. And the chamber has a terrific website. Is that something that we're presenting those in a comprehensive way?
All right. At 4:30, council will take a look at the economic development strategic plan. Jonathan, the plan is to balance business and the resort community, protecting economic vitality by diversifying the economy. So you've come up with short and long-term goals?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, every 2 years, the council reviews a new budget, and we have biennial strategic plans to reflect council's goals and priorities. And staff then has work plans to implement what council's goals are, and this is really getting ahead of that work plan. You know, the old work plan was 2 years ago, was put together in a time where the economy wasn't sure what it was doing. You know, I think the resort economy is very much back and very strong right now, and that gives us an opportunity to look at things a little bit differently. And you know, we've long balanced in my office, economic development in Park City isn't about jobs and industry and business. Really, it's a do no harm to the resort economy and our existing partners, and then supplement it where we can. And the city's role is very important, and we've very much taken a building place role here. How can we help enable and support a destination tourism economy, but also make it a nice place for the residents and locals to live in and play in, right?
So you don't have plans then to attract certain businesses?
Well, we've talked for the past 2 years about really articulating a business recruitment and retention strategy. And, you know, every time we start to to talk about tax breaks or bringing in people, you know, there's this whole stigma of enabling and facilitating additional growth just for growth's sake. We have a pretty strong economy. So I think we can be pretty selective in who we're, you know, recruiting. I think, first of all, the first thing we want to do is retain existing businesses and local and small business. You know, that's our bread and butter, and why bring in more and stuff from the outside when you have great people here now who with maybe just a little bit of help can do well. So you've seen us work with Soul Poles. You know, as an existing business, they were out in the county, and we were able to work with Brian to relocate him to a location into town. He lives in town. He rides his bike to work. He's now hired two more management level people, you know, so making local living wage jobs for people who can live here and contribute to what I'd call a more sustainable economy. We're excited about kind of honing in on that approach. Go ahead.
Certainly a component of attracting business is the whole, you know, having the technological capacity. Where do things stand? I mean, at one point we had talked about, you know, getting broadband and higher speed connections.
City Council has articulated some areas that they're willing to look into. Again, the first place is do no harm to the current economy. But we've talked about things that are complementary to the resort economy, whether it's bringing in outdoor-related businesses or whether it's high-altitude training, sports science, some technology into that. Fiber has been one that they've asked us to look at. Defining a role in the world of fiber is incredibly hard. We've certainly taken the approach, as with most things, of when we're doing infrastructure and providing infrastructure, we want to allow for fiber, right? So every capital project we do, whether it's in water or whether it's on Main Street, we're making sure we have 4-inch conduits that can allow for fiber when the city can figure out what our role is. You know, I keep watching what Google's doing in the free market. It seems like, you know, maybe holding our breath on this one might not be a bad idea because it seems like it's coming. But, you know, Matt Dias, the assistant city manager, and Scott Robertson, our IT director, are continuing to work on that.
You'll probably see that this month on the council agenda.
Sure.
And Jonathan
with an update.
And Jonathan just told me that we're pulling in 1 gig of fiber into the library.
The city's fiber will be available at the library for the public to use. So we'll have incredibly fast, you know, incredibly high bandwidth at the library. We're really excited about that.
Yeah. So as we talk about attracting more business, I mean, does that come in conflict then with our value of, you know, small town?
I think it can, and that's why I think, you know, we can be incredibly selective. One of the things I'm going to be talking about is expanding our economic development grant program. You know, right now we have up to $20,000 annually that we can dole out how we choose. You know, there's pretty robust criteria, and you always have to get back what you put into it, whether it's direct or indirect benefits. But if we can expand that, I think we can be very selective with who and how we want to award it. For instance, we have two or three companies right now that are looking for more grants. One's a small chocolate manufacturing company, a kid that grew up here, and he's moving back here and building a new cafe and chocolate shop. You know, he's got his wife and they've got a few high-paying, you know, management jobs. That could be a really nice redevelopment, not too dissimilar to Soul Poles. We have an avalanche technology company that's got a bunch of MIT engineers. They want to be in town. Having a bunch of really, really smart, really well-educated kids who are prototyping a high-tech, outdoor-related software and hardware piece, like, that's really exciting. I think that can really fit with keeping Park City Park City, bringing in youth, bringing in smart people, and providing some living wage jobs.
All right. Also, a transportation planning update at 5 o'clock. Last week, we heard from Kent Cashel presenting the plan. This week, what? Council's spending some time asking questions?
And this is the opportunity to have some discussion. Kent Cashel and Brooks Robinson are spending an incredible amount of energy and time. They've not only developed the plan, but implementing the plan, and it has so many different pieces to it, it looks like an octopus. And so what they did last week was took council through a framework for understanding, here's what we're doing, here are the steps we're taking, and here are the time frames. This week is more focused on discussion. Just for a moment, back to what Jonathan was talking about, you know, when he's talking about expanding into things like a chocolate company or an avalanche technology, he's talking about expanding into complementary industries that are complementary to the resort economy. One of the strengths of Park City is we know who we are. We are a resort economy. And when people say diversify, to look at diversifying into something like manufacturing or something that is so different from who we are, number one, it would mean taking our eye off the ball of the resort economy. And number two, it would mean bringing in industries that don't necessarily fit our community character. And so I really appreciate that John and his team are very much focused on complementary business acquisition and retention rather than incredibly high switching costs associated with, let's say, becoming a manufacturing town.
Back to the transportation update. I mean, at what point are we going to actually see some changes here?
I think we're seeing changes now, right? We've already seen changes in parking in China Bridge. So we're already seeing more availability on Friday and Saturday nights because employees, they either have to buy a more expensive pass or they park on the top level. Council has authorized moving forward with looking at exactly what type of parking technology should we bring in. So for example, do we bring in the gates or do we bring in the gates plus something where you can, there will be a sign that will say there are 5 spaces on the second level of China Bridge. Those types of technology. So we're absolutely looking at that now. And over the holidays, you'll remember that we did a test program with the HPCA we didn't anticipate would have huge success. It was a very clear, this isn't the way we need to go. And so I feel like we're actually quite active right now. Additionally, Jonathan is working on part of a task force with Kent on, we have a number of RFPs out right now and our staff is working on an update to the 248 plan so we can look at exactly when can we bring on the park and ride on that front, as well as update to actually a new plan for looking at where's the best place to put parking. Should it be in Bonanza Park? Should it be in Lower Park Ave? Exactly where does that belong?
All right. Also, during the regular meeting, Jonathan, there will be a vote with regard to a request for proposal for the design of the brew pub parking garage and plaza. So what's included here? Because the staff report, it sounded like, I mean, we could have one level, two levels of underground parking. We could have a amphitheater. We could have affordable housing. Well, we have it all.
The brew pub plaza is kind of the crown jewel of our downtown improvements that are, you know, planned over about 10 years. And it's the Historic Park City Alliance's top priority. So we want to talk to council about their general approach and get them to affirm how we think we'll move forward. Again, how we go vertical on the plaza level, whether there's a water feature or a stage or a coffee shop or a restaurant, those things are going to be hard and cumbersome, and they're going to take a long time. Does the city own it? Do we rent it out? Are we having restrooms? Is it an Olympic museum? You know, all those will take a while. We're already about 2 years behind on this project because we kind of put it on hold pending the outcome of the Deer Valley gondola discussion. Since Deer Valley has really exhausted that brew pub location, we're now ready to move forward. I just don't want to wait 2 years to start building while we answer all those hard questions on, is there a water feature or, you know, is it a stage? So I'm asking council if they're supportive of the approach of just trying to build a parking garage, which is that base level underneath it, so you can have the at-grade plaza later. I mean, we're short on parking. We all know that. And if we can, you know, get a parking project done in the summer so it's ready for the winter and buttoned up, and you might even be able to park on the roof of it for the winter, I'm excited about maybe taking that phased approach to parking. So that's a part of it. And then a big question is how important is affordable housing to you? We could put some housing on this thing. It might, you know, compete with your event space goals. And it's also pretty interesting to watch the housing at New Park as that, you know, event center out there became more robust. All the new condos around it, as soon as they moved in, they started to complain immediately about the events out there. So we just want to check in. I think the last important thing is just setting expectations on the budget. You know, we're doing a tremendous job on our sidewalks and our streetscape work in the downtown. We're about 35% under budget. But as we've built out the plazas and the little parks, you know, the bare bench, they're coming in, you know, as much as 40% over budget. And that's, you know, that's real money. They're $600,000 and $700,000. I think it reflects the city council and the community's commitment to building place and, you know, using the resort city sales tax, which is built on the backs of the visitor, to help build amenities for the town. But we want to just make sure that if we have a $4.2 million budget that was created 4 years ago, we should all expect that to go up. And we just want to make sure we're setting that expectation and making sure council's supportive of that direction.
All right. So what are the parameters then of the RFP? I mean, are you looking for a certain number of parking spots or?
just replace kind of in kind what's there. Obviously, you'll be constrained by the site and the amount of concrete and structure you need to put in. But there's 48 spots, give or take, out there now, and we'd expect a replacement of that.
Underground, yeah.
And, we, you know, going down a second level is certainly an option. But the amount of structure and ramping to get down a whole nother level drives the cost through the roof, and you really eat into that ability to provide even 48. You're taking out as much as 30 to 40% of the footprint with more ramps to get down a level. So intuitively, I don't think that's going to be feasible, but we want to run that ground ball out and make sure we're, you know, giving the HPCA and ultimately council that choice.
Yeah, given the location, you've got some challenges, I'm guessing. There's a stream that doesn't run too far away, and of course, tailings, huh?
Yeah, we've done some preliminary geotech testing about 2 years ago, and there's nothing that's scaring us, but I just probably cursed myself by saying it. So, but yeah, I think you're right. Well, you know, building an old town and especially going deep is always a concern.
Okay, really quick, need to mention, of course, also on the agenda, the consideration of an ordinance amending the anti-idling ordinance to give it, what, some more teeth here?
What we're looking to do, staff is recommending that we eliminate the temperature requirement. So right now, if it's below 32 degrees, you can technically idle according to our law. And so we're looking to eliminate that, and also recommending that we take the currently you can idle for 3 minutes and take that down to 1 minute. Obviously, police are very concerned about things like safety. So in other words, if you need to clear your windshield before you drive, that's still important to do. The other piece that staff is recommending is moving enforcement from the environmental sustainability staff of basically 1.5 over to the police department and parking.
All right. What about signage? Because last time this was brought up, the council had said that it wanted to put up more signage before we, you know, start doing anything.
Staff has in the report the number of signs. There's significant signage in the community, and one of the conferences I went to one time talking about streetscapes is the idea of signage blindness. We actually think that we're going to have more success changing the enforcement and tweaking the law to make it something that's more easily enforceable rather than adding signage at this point.
Okay. Diane, Jonathan, thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Youth Sports Alliance is hosting the Spring Vibe this Saturday in the studios with details. I have two-time Olympic medalist Shannon Barkey-Happy. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So it sounds like a lot of fun. Party on the plaza. Tell us the details.
Oh my gosh. It is going to be the best spring event. With this weather we've been having, we have to go out and celebrate. So it's this Saturday, April 4th from noon to 4 on the Townlift Plaza right by the bridge. And it's free to everybody. So we just want to come and celebrate our Olympic legacy that we have with all the young athletes that have just had a terrific season and celebrating with some of our past Olympians. We're going to have food for sale from the Bridge Cafe. And also Red Rocks has been just an amazing partner with us, and we're going to have a beer garden. So it's going to be a really good time. Music, the Patois reggae band is going to be out there, so we're going to be dancing. We've got a balloon artist, magician, just all kinds of fun out on the Townlift Plaza.
All right, and like you say, it's free except for purchases of food and beverage.
Exactly, yep, it's free just to come, smile, have a good time, and soak up the sun.
Okay, sounds like you're going to have photo booth and...
are going to have a photo booth. Yeah, so we've got Derek Parra, who is an Olympic gold medalist in speed skating, is going to be our MC. So I'm sure he would love to step in the photo booth and take some photos. We've also got some other athletes, Emily Cook, Tracy Evans, two aerialists that are just amazing, Billy DeMong. I'm going to be there. I'm hopefully going to talk my brother into also doing some of the stuff with the beer. So it's going to be fun. I think we're going to have a really good time. And we're all willing to talk with all the kids and, you know, have this really, really fun spring event.
Great. Sounds fun. Anything else going on that you wanted to mention with regard to YSA?
You know, it's just been such an exciting time, I think, for our organization. We're really trying to pull the community together. And all the proceeds from this go to the Youth Sports Alliance for future. And right now, we have our Stein Erickson endowment that we are still raising funds for. We want to do $2 million total for that, and we've already raised $1.3 million. So the future is so bright, and we've been able to give out so much more money this year in grants alone to kids to follow their dreams. So it's been really fun, and I just had a board meeting with everybody yesterday, and we are just so excited about how far we've come in these last couple years and where it's going in the future.
All right, ysaparkcity.org.
Yep.
People can get more information about that.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, Shannon, nice to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, too.